Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to Families USA's What's at Stake for Medicaid in 2018 Elections media telebriefing. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Patrick Willard, Senior Director of State and National Strategic Partnership at Families USA. Please go ahead.
Thank you, April. This is Patrick Willard at Families USA, and I'll be your moderator today. Our speakers will discuss what's at stake at Medicaid in the upcoming November elections, and we'll have an opportunity for a question and answer session after the presentations, and then we'll close with some final thoughts. So with us today in the speaking order will be myself, Patrick Willard, the Honorable Adam Moorfield, a Nebraska State Senator, Stacey Stanford from the Utah Health Policy Project, where she's the Health Policy Analyst. We will not have Luke Mayville joining us. He was unable to be on the call, but we'll discuss what's going on in Idaho. And then we'll turn it over to Elliot Fishman, who's our Senior Director of Health Policy here at Families USA, to talk a little bit about Medicaid and the Medicaid waivers that we've been seeing. Before I start, I'd like to let the members of the media know that this call is being recorded, and we will be able to circulate it to you at a later time. So let's get into it. As you know, much of the attention that we've had in the 2018 midterms has focused on the possibility of a blue wave and what that could mean in terms of the Congress and the future of the Affordable Care Act. But today we want to focus on how the midterms are going to affect the state governments and what that will mean for Medicaid programs in the 2019 legislative sessions and beyond. We'll discuss how the state elections impact on the landscape of Medicaid. We'll focus on Medicaid expansions. And then we'll turn to the ballot initiatives in the three states where grassroots movements have emerged to push forward a Medicaid expansion effort. Then we'll close by discussing how the elections will affect current Medicaid programs and their waivers. Some states are pursuing changes to their Medicaid programs, and those changes in many cases are placing restrictions or barriers on Medicaid eligibility. So elections in those states could bring in new administrations that would oppose work requirements or other restrictions. As we look at the landscape for 2018, we're finding that 36 states will be electing governors. And the results in those states include 17 states that are going to have a new state executive, either because of an open seat or a term-limited governorship or defeated incumbents. So 17 new governors will be coming in 2019 based on these elections. In those open seats, there are at least 8 races for states that have not expanded Medicaid. The states that are going to be having new governors and have not had a Medicaid expansion include Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Kansas, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Tennessee, and Wyoming. So as you know, there are 17 states that have not done Medicaid expansions. 8 of those will have new governors coming in 2019, and so these 2018 elections are important there. The choices in those states will be critical to the decisions on the future of Medicaid expansions. In fact, what we've found here at Families USA is that the single biggest factor in state Medicaid expansion since 2014 has been the election of a governor who supports increasing the health care coverage. In Alaska, Louisiana, and Virginia, new governors since 2014 have successfully enacted Medicaid expansions following their election. The gubernatorial candidates that we're seeing in these non-expansion states are touting their support for expansions, and several are being rated as toss-ups by Cook Political Report. So you're seeing that in races in Florida, and Georgia and Kansas, those state governors' races are rated as toss-ups, and the outcome could affect the Medicaid expansion. In addition, in Wisconsin, where you have Governor Scott Walker running for re-election, that state is rated as a toss-up, and that state has not embraced Medicaid expansion, but could if Tony Evers, who is the candidate running against Walker, were to be elected. In addition to the governor's races, the bulk of state legislative seats will also be on the ballot. Currently, Republicans control all the levers of government, a trifecta, in 25 states. So half the states of the country have control of both the governors and both houses of the legislature in Republicans' hands. It's possible that the election results in legislatures could mean that some states would be more welcome to health care coverage for low-income adults and families. And that became very clear in the case of Virginia in 2017, where Democrats were able to pick up 15 seats in the 2017 elections, basically changing the state from a two-thirds Republican majority in the House of Delegates to a two-vote difference, which made it easier for Governor Ralph Northam to be able to get his Medicaid expansion plan moving forward. So as we can see, these 2018 races are critical in terms of Medicaid expansion, but it's not just in the elections of governors that we're seeing the Medicaid expansion be on the ballot. In three states, we have the opportunity, or voters have the opportunity, to vote on a Medicaid expansion ballot initiative. And so we have joining us today two representatives of two of those states who have been involved in the grassroots movement to put these initiatives on the ballot and to make it possible for the state to enact Medicaid expansion through referendums. So we'll go first to the state of Nebraska, where Senator Adam Moorfield is joining us. Senator Moorfield was involved in the Medicaid expansion effort in Nebraska and has been active both in the legislature on that effort, but also more recently in the ballot initiative work. So let me turn it over now to Senator Adam Moorfield from Nebraska.
Well, thank you for having me. As Patrick said, my name is Adam Moorfield. I represent an area in Lincoln and the Nebraska legislature. I've been in the legislature for 4 years, and I've introduced Medicaid expansion bills the last 2 years, one straight Medicaid expansion bill and then also an attempt to get it on the ballot through the legislature. In the last 4 years that I've been in the legislature, in the last 2 years that I've been the leader on this issue in the legislature, I realized very quickly that we would not have the necessary votes in order to get Medicaid expansion passed in the legislative realm. That's why we switched to the ballot. And the night that I made the decision was the night that Maine passed it in 2017, and I reached out to national partners to bring that same kind of campaign to Nebraska. With local partners and national partners, we did just that. We collected about 30% more signatures than what we actually needed to get it on the ballot. Those signatures were certified in August. I think one of the biggest things that surprised me was the level of enthusiasm and grassroots support the minute that I announced that I was going to attempt to get it on the ballot before we even had a campaign together. We had people messaging me via text, on Facebook, via Twitter, with how they could get involved and how they could collect signatures and educate their neighbors, friends, and families about the importance of Medicaid expansion. So since then, we've gotten it on the ballot. It's been certified. We had a challenge that went all the way to the Supreme Court that was found in our favor. So we're moving forward. We're very excited because it was clear that after 7 years in the legislature of fighting this issue, we weren't going to get it passed in the legislature and that the people would have to do the job that, quite frankly, the legislators weren't willing to do. I would say the other thing that is encouraging is, number one, not just the level of enthusiasm from grassroots folks who collected, by the way, thousands of signatures, volunteers that collected thousands of these signatures. We collected a little bit, we collected about 100 and I think 20, 25,000 signatures total. But in any case, the volunteers collected thousands of signatures in addition to some of the folks that we paid, but then also just the amount of, quite frankly, people that fall within the Medicaid expansion gap that have come out to us and talked to us about that and talked to the news media and other folks and shared their story about how, yeah, they're working full-time. They're working two or three jobs, but they still can't afford health care, and they fall within this gap, and they have family. They support other friends and family members, and that this is critical care. And they're just one or two paychecks away from bankruptcy at any given moment. So long story short, in Nebraska, after 7 years of attempts in the legislature, we've had incredible grassroots enthusiasm. They collected thousands of signatures in our last effort. We're headed to the ballot, and we have more volunteers than we know what to do with. Our biggest problem right now is having the capacity to organize them effectively, which is a good problem to have.
So thank you, Senator Moorfield. And thanks for sharing the story of Nebraska. And if someone could
Thank you.
So now we'll go to Stacy. Stacy Stanford from the Utah Health Policy Project. The Utah Health Policy Project was one of the first groups that Families USA reached out to about the notion of a ballot initiative. And the Utah Health Policy Project has embraced the ballot initiative after seeing a number of attempts being made in the legislature. So, Stacy, I'll turn it over to you and take it away.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you for having me today. Like you said, my name is Stacy Stanford. I'm with Utah Health Policy Project, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization in Utah working on sustainable healthcare solutions on the state and the federal level. I started with UHPP actually as a consumer in the coverage gap myself, and then moved on as an intern, and then they hired me on, and now my job is fighting for expansion. So Utah has been debating Medicaid expansion, like Nebraska, for more than 5 years. And although the legislature has approved incremental efforts along the way, the state has continually failed to fully expand Medicaid. And so that is where the Utah Decides Healthcare Ballot Initiative comes in. We are bringing that decision directly to the people. Utah is a really unique state in many ways, but one thing that sets us apart is our strong values and a tendency towards serving our neighbors. We have wonderfully caring communities, and across years of polling, we can see that. These compassionate Utahns have continually supported expanding healthcare access. From 2014 to just a few days ago, we've had polling consistently showing 60%+ support in favor of full Medicaid expansion. And this support isn't just Democrats, it extends across party lines. Republicans, we have a lot of outspoken supporters on all party lines, and those unaffiliated voters as well really strongly support this initiative. So Proposition 3 would fully expand Medicaid as the ACA intended, up to 138% of the poverty line, and this would benefit 150,000 Utahns who are currently trapped in that Medicaid coverage gap. The initiative also includes a funding mechanism to cover the state's 10% share of the cost, a small increase in the non-food sales tax from 4.7% to 4.85%, which equals 15 cents on every $100, or in simpler terms, it's about a penny on a movie ticket. So that investment would ensure that our friends and neighbors have access to healthcare coverage and guarantees that we will reclaim all of our tax dollars, about $800 million a year, that we're sending to other states but missing out on here at home. Proposition 3 asks Utah voters to make a value decision. Is it worth that extra penny to provide life-saving care to people in need? We believe that this is a great deal for our state, and Utahns really agree. There's a growing enthusiasm. There's a grassroots movement of support. We're traveling the state and speaking to these enthusiastic crowds. We have a lot of energetic volunteers on the ground attending events, talking to voters about the benefits of expansion. And many of our volunteers have spent time in the coverage gap themselves, and so they understand just how high these stakes are. One example is a gentleman named James Rounds. He's donated his time at more events than just about anybody else. James has multiple sclerosis, and he's been denied disability-based Medicaid several times, so he knows firsthand just how important this expansion would be. His necessary medications total more than $7,000 a month, and so right now he's fortunate to have a payment arrangement in place, but his debt still continues to spiral, and he has to weigh difficult decisions about rationing prescriptions or choosing medications over food and housing. Last year, he even had to rely on GoFundMe to avoid homelessness. My personal story is similar. I was in a car accident 8 years ago, which triggered some disabling health issues. However, I, too, was repeatedly denied Medicaid, and I spent years uninsured, even as I was using a wheelchair and nearly bedridden. So James and I, we go out in the community and we share our stories and those of countless other youth hunts in the coverage gap, and people are paying attention. When interacting with the public, we encounter overwhelming support. The biggest barrier that we see to our quest to pass Proposition 3 is not so much opposition, but a simple lack of understanding that A, the coverage gap exists, and B, that we have a solution in Proposition 3.
Thanks so much, Stacey. We appreciate you sharing the story from Utah. And so there is an additional state that is also has a Medicaid ballot initiative. That is in Idaho. The effort in Idaho was led in part by Luke Mayville, who was the co-founder of Reclaim Idaho, a group that had been traveling the state with a green van making the case for Medicaid expansion. Luke and the Reclaim Idaho folks were able to get signatures and put the initiative on the ballot there in Idaho, and since the ballot has actually been put on, since the initiative has been put on the ballot, they have been able to gather both Republican and Democratic support for the ballot initiative, including support of the ranking members of health committees in the Senate in Idaho. The Reclaim Idaho movement is one that, again, is based on the notion that you have to build a grassroots movement for the healthcare expansion. Idaho, like the other states, has seen governors that have supported Medicaid expansion but been unable to be able to get it through the legislature itself. And so in Idaho, they have turned to the ballot initiative as well. Finally, there is an initiative in Montana state advocates want to be able to retain the Medicaid expansion that Montana currently has. That expansion is due to sunset in 2019. The ballot initiative was raised in Montana to remove that sunset and also to fund the Medicaid expansion itself through an increase in the tobacco tax. So that's an additional state that has been looking at a ballot initiative around Medicaid expansion and health care. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to our final speaker before the question and answer session. Elliot Fishman is Families USA Senior Director of Health Policy and a former director of the group that was responsible for Medicaid waivers at CMS. So, Elliot, please go ahead.
Thanks, Patrick. So you've heard about important ballot initiatives that can move Medicaid expansion forward, and you've heard us discuss how who is elected governor and who is elected to state legislatures will determine if additional states expand Medicaid. The impact of the 2018 elections goes further in that the outcomes will also shape the basic structure of the Medicaid program in both expansion and in non-expansion states. 21 states have requests that are either approved, pending, or otherwise in process for CMS to use its waiver authority to let them make often dramatic and unprecedented cuts to their Medicaid programs. And these changes are opposed to Medicaid's purpose of delivering medical care. Things like adding work requirements more broadly, additional paperwork reporting requirements, premiums as a condition of eligibility for people with no or close to no income. And in general, massive loss of coverage for not meeting those requirements, either in terms of the underlying requirements or just the new reporting that is associated with them. All of these are program changes that would fundamentally change the Medicaid program and would also result in nationally millions of people losing health coverage. CMS has approved some of these requests. And litigation on the limits of CMS's authority to grant waivers is underway. But all of these requests originate in the states, sometimes in the legislature, sometimes directly from the governor, but all at the state level. And 2018 elections will be central to which states move forward and both in the existing states with requests and potentially additional states. It's important not to assume that litigation will be determinative. Who controls the governor's mansion and who controls the state house will determine not only whether a state expands Medicaid, but in some fundamental ways could make a difference in how the program looks and how secure enrollees' coverage is. So Kentucky is a case in point. When Republican Matt Bevin succeeded Democratic Governor Steve Beshear as governor, he petitioned CMS to add work and more fundamental paperwork requirements to Medicaid coverage. The Michigan gubernatorial and legislative election this November is critical to whether and how their new work requirement now proposed at CMS gets implemented. This administration federally is clear that it wants to approve these waivers, and that's not going to change regardless of who controls Congress. It only needs governors and legislators to send those requests to CMS. Furthermore, Congress could act on things like work requirements that are struck down in court. And if Congress does take up backfilling what are currently waiver requests in legislation, of course, the 2018 midterms will shape Congress itself. But as we learned in 2017, governors have a major voice in Congress. So these state elections profoundly matter for Medicaid's future, and of course, we have 37 governors' races to watch.
Thanks, Elliot. So, April, we'll turn it back over to you for any questions that people might have.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, simply press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Also, if you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Please keep in mind that only members of the media may ask questions at this time. Once again, star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment. And we'll take our first caller. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Harris Meyer with Modern Healthcare. I wanted to ask Senator Moorfield whether he expects opposition from Governor Ricketts if the voters approve Medicaid expansion in Nebraska.
So Governor Ricketts has indicated in the media that this is a decision up to the voters and that he is personally opposed to Medicaid expansion. At this point in time, we have not seen him invest money directly against the campaign. But obviously, that's a possibility at any given time, and we're hard at work educating voters across the state on how this is going to benefit everyone in the state positively. So to answer your question, he has not engaged directly yet, other than just to reiterate his opposition, but we're not taking that for granted.
Was there anything further, caller?
No, that answers that question. Thank you.
Next caller, please go ahead.
Hi, it's Noam Levy at the Los Angeles Times. Excuse me. Elliot, you and Patrick both talked about Michigan, obviously, as a place where the legislative elections as well as the governor's election could affect the waivers. Are there other states that you're watching specifically where control of the legislature or the governor's office may be in play, and that may affect a waiver that's either been approved or is in the pipeline?
So I can start, and I'd invite Patrick to participate in responding this too. You know, there were important debates in Colorado and Minnesota around waivers. Both of those are open seats. And important legislative elections. I think we're watching the Maine gubernatorial election in terms of implementation of belated implementation of the will of clear expressed will of the Maine electorate, but that implementation can take different forms. And I think that's an election that we'll keep an eye on. But, you know, Noam, I'd also just say more broadly that this is the phenomenon of these waivers has taken hold. Like 21 states is a huge number to start with. So it's about additional states. It's also about how things will play out in those states and really whether this becomes a national change to the fundamental structure of the Medicaid program.
And this is Patrick. I, on the state legislative side, I do think, you know, I mentioned that what happened in Virginia because of, we can see from that just the overwhelming effect in a legislative race where you flip 15 seats and you suddenly become, even though you don't take over the chamber, you're still able to have some influence, greater influence to support health care. So you've got the Michigan House, I think, that is a place where you could see that sort of thing. I think there's also the Minnesota House. The Florida Senate might be a place that could be in play as well as the Wisconsin Senate. And then, you know, you've got much slimmer majorities, as Elliot mentioned, in the Minnesota Senate. So there's the possibility there. The Maine Senate could also be a place where you could see a change in the party of control. So I think those are all states to, sort of where the legislative races are really going to be critical in terms of what happens in 2019 and beyond. Obviously, the Michigan governor's race and the Ohio governor's race are important. The Tennessee governor's race is important both for the Medicaid expansion and also for the fact that Tennessee is one of those non-expansion states that's looking at a work requirement proposal, just as Oklahoma is. So those are some other states where there could be some influence on the waiver side of things.
Real quickly, just to follow up on that, do you see any states, I guess, in addition to Michigan, where you have a waiver that has been approved, where you might have a change in the balance of power that could impact sort of the future of that waiver?
I'd say Maine would be the most likely candidate there, depending on how things. I think that's the most likely.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Sure thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like there's states where waivers haven't been approved yet, but we anticipate they might be, right? Ohio, Wisconsin.
The Kansas governor's race is also one where there might be some opportunities. I think in that race, it's really going to sort of it's a different mix there.
Next caller, please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Bruce Jackson with Forbes. Just a quick question. Have there been any recent polls done, either internal or external, that for the three states with the ballot initiatives that give you any more optimism?
Let's start with Stacey. I think you mentioned something, and then Senator Moorfield.
Yeah, we actually just had a new poll come out a couple days ago through Utah Policy, which I believe was conducted through Dan Jones and Associates, which showed 65% support in the state. And so that's consistent with polling that we've seen over the last 4 years. And so that's very encouraging for us.
Cool.
This is Adam from Nebraska. Both of ours are internal polls, and I don't have authorization to release the numbers, but I'll tell you that the poll that made us decide that this was viable that we did in December was very good. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had the local and national resources come in. And we did a follow-up poll after we got the signatures in July, and it basically exactly mirrored our original poll. So support has been strong. It's been good. And in addition, we know that our opponents have also conducted polls, and their polling, in some cases, from what I've heard, is better than our polling. So in terms of in favor of us. We continue to enjoy strong overmajority support in Nebraska based on our polling, and we're optimistic in November.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Next caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Maureen Grappi with USA Today. I had two questions, one for Senator Moorfield about the disconnect here. You just said your poll showed you had very strong support, and you mentioned all the enthusiasm from volunteers. So if there is that much support, why didn't the state lawmakers feel that and feel that pressure to pass it on their own? And then my other question for the Families USA, USA folks is about if these state ballot initiatives pass, I know there are some states it's a lot tougher to get ballot initiatives even on the ballot. Do you see any other states that haven't non-expansion states that could go this route if these are successful?
So do you want me to start first? This is Adam Morfo. I'll just go first unless there's objections. So to answer your question, really it's been politics with the governors. So both of our governors have strongly opposed Medicaid expansion and has made that one of their key issues to oppose in the legislature. So that's caused a lot of problems. In addition, our current governor 2 years ago took out three moderate Republicans by strongly opposing their campaign and investing a lot of money against them. So these moderate Republicans were voted out of office for a lot of different reasons, but primarily because the governor targeted them, and the governor wields a lot of power. And so long story short, for whatever reason, this has been a hyper-partisan, hyper-political issue in Nebraska, and it's been one that our more conservative colleagues have shied away from opposing the governor on. I think that's primarily the reason for the disconnect.
Thanks.
And could you repeat your question for the Families USA folks?
Yeah, so the question is, it's harder in some states than others to get ballot initiatives on, and I'm wondering if you see some other states that would be non-expansion states that would likely go this route, depending on the success of the states that have initiatives up this fall.
Sure. So I think that, there are limited – this is Patrick – and there are a limited number of states that can actually do ballot initiatives. So that's one thing that ends up playing into this, so that a state like Tennessee could not do a ballot initiative. I do think that just as we saw enthusiasm after the adoption in Maine, we will see it again after success in 2018. I think some states that Florida is the state that I think has shown the most interest in doing this. They face some tough requirements for their ballot initiatives, but I think Florida is at the top of the list for doing this going forward. I think there's also a possibility, I believe, of Missouri taking this up, but I think that would depend on how the legislature turns out in this upcoming election. And April, what is the number that people need to be typing in to ask a question?
Absolutely, that's *1 if you would like to ask a question or make a comment. Next caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Phil Galowitz from Kaiser Health News. Thanks for doing this. A couple quick questions. So in Nebraska and Utah, can you talk about like what your strategy is going to be over the next 6 weeks? Is it going to be TV commercials, billboards, events? Can you talk a little more in detail about what's the strategy to build the support? And have you seen in those states or elsewhere any organized support actively running ads or doing anything yet to show their opposition?
Yeah, so in Nebraska, okay. We have a field team that's employed by the campaign of three folks full-time. So they're right now organizing door-to-door work. They're organizing community events. They're organizing other volunteers to do similar work. In addition, we have several different partner nonprofits and organizations that have their own field teams that are currently doing door-to-door and grassroots work. We're going to be sending direct mail and palm cards. We're going to be on the radio waves and TV waves, we expect, in October. So it's going to be a multifaceted education and get out the vote campaign in Nebraska.
And Stacey?
Yeah, so in Utah, our plan for the next 6 weeks is we're just starting to roll out our mainstream media. We had our first ad air over the TV yesterday, which features a pediatrician talking about the importance of expansion. We also are going to do the same kind of direct mail. We're going to continue events. I mean, we're doing events several times a week at this point where we're out in the community, and we're going to keep that up. We're also going to add more phone banking and direct voter contact like that. We're teaming up with organizations like AARP. They're going to be putting out some ads for us as well. And so really just starting to turn up the steam now with those media ads, digital ads also, so things on social media, Hulu, you know, that kind of advertising. And a lot of the focus in the social media and the digital and things like that is that story banking and elevating the stories of individuals in the coverage gap. As far as the opposition, it is luckily been fairly quiet so far. There is an organized and official no on three pick that has been put together that is created by the Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers group. But the last time we checked, there was no money in the pick. And AFP is running a Facebook campaign, but so far we haven't seen anything too aggressive as far as opposition goes.
And this is Patrick. This
Nebraska?
Yes, that's Adam. Pretty much the same. That's the same case in Nebraska. Americans for Prosperity has come out in opposition. They've written some letters to the editor and op-eds. But beyond that, we haven't seen much help. But we're expecting that there will be opposition. There has not been a formal campaign committee formed in opposition to our campaign or our ballot initiative, which is required under state law if anyone expends or raises over $5,000.
And this is Patrick. Just in Idaho, I know that the Freedom Foundation has put together an opposition campaign. I don't know that we've seen a lot of funding going into it. In Montana, there has been reports of millions of dollars in opposition funding that have come from tobacco supporting groups to oppose the ballot initiative in Montana. In addition, just to add to what Stacey was saying, she noted that AARP is helping out in Utah. There's also the Cancer Action Network and the state organizations or state chapters of American Cancer Society that are supporting these ballot initiatives in all three states. So there are additional groups that have memberships in these states that are supporting the ballot initiatives as well.
Okay, thank you.
Next caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Ricky Zip with S&P Global, and I was just wondering, while Maine might be unique and we've seen the implementation of Medicaid expansion be put off, has there been any steps taken to make sure that if these initiatives are passed, they will be successfully and quickly implemented in the states?
So I think we are very focused and have been working with – this is Patrick at Families USA – very focused in working with groups in Maine since the – prior to the ballot initiative, and then since then in terms of strategizing around efforts to make sure these pass. We have seen in Idaho that the gubernatorial candidates have both indicated a willingness to accept the voters' decision on Medicaid expansion, and so – while we're expecting to work on implementation within the legislature itself, we do know that the gubernatorial candidates there have indicated that they would support the will of the voters. I'll let the other two states speak for what they're seeing on the ground.
Well, in Nebraska, obviously we're focused right now on just getting it passed, and then we'll go from there. That being said, we have several advocacy groups, Nebraska Appleseed in particular, that are well-versed and experts in litigating some of these issues, and if there's any stumbling blocks like what we've seen in Maine, they're ready to go next session.
Yeah, here in Utah, so part of what we did to avoid the kerfuffle that has happened in Maine is that funding mechanism that we included in the initiative. So we're not going to have to go to the legislature and ask for them to come up with the funding. It's already wrapped into the initiative and the proposition itself. So we expect that that'll help eliminate some of the potential situation there. We also, I mean, the Utah Constitution treats a ballot initiative on equal footing as it does a piece of legislation passed through the Senate, through the House, and signed by the governor. So we can see, we expect maybe for there to be some contention in the next session after it is passed, because then the legislature does, it's like any other law, so they have the right to go in to amend it and make changes that way. But we also hope that, I mean, if it passes with two-thirds support, that they will respect the will of the people and not tinker with it. So that's kind of what we have done to prepare for that situation.
And from this is Patrick again. From Families USA's perspective, we're going to be working with these groups in the states to on the implementation strategy and working to provide them the technical assistance that they need in terms of making the case for getting these through the legislatures and the strategies that we've seen work in other states.
All right, thank you.
Next caller, please go ahead.
Hi, Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar with AP. Thanks for doing this call and for taking my question. And basically, you've had a lot of good detail here about the situation in particular states. But this question is going to Patrick and Elliot in particular, and then the state-level folks. If you care to jump in, please do. I was wondering if you could give us a picture of what the forest could potentially look like after the midterms. Like, it could be as bad as this, or it could be as good as that from your perspective. In other words, painting a picture of what kind of change you might get one way or another that could be discerned at the national level.
Well, I think this is Patrick, and I think from our view on in terms of Medicaid expansions and the reducing the number of states that have not done Medicaid expansions, I think with these ballot initiatives, with passage in all three states, we've obviously taken a pretty strong group out of the West, and there would be, I think Wyoming would still be out there in terms of not having an expansion, but by and large, you'd see the West as having moved ahead with Medicaid expansion, which should reduce the concerns about Medicaid expansion. The Southwest, I think, is where the governor's races are going to make the key difference. To pick up a state like Georgia or to make headway in Florida would be a big step in terms of reducing the number of uninsured overall because of the large uninsured populations you would have in both those states. That would also send a signal to the other southern states that that it's possible to move forward on Medicaid expansion and get those adopted by actually adding to the number of states that we have in Medicaid expansion. I think we're going to be able to make a better case nationally in terms of the support for broader coverage for adults and the need to make sure that that continues in the next Congress and going forward from there. I'll turn it over to Elliot to talk about the waivers and whatnot.
Yeah, so Patrick got to talk about the best case, and I get to talk about the worst case. There are over 30 million non-disabled adults enrolled in the Medicaid program, and I would say hinging on the outcome of this election is whether their coverage is structured the way Medicaid coverage for children and for people with disabilities and for dual eligibles is structured, in which it's structured so as to get eligible people enrolled, and there are not a lot of barriers that are put in front of people getting and maintaining eligibility, or whether the program is going to be structured in a way that it's very difficult to enroll, it's very difficult to maintain eligibility, and if the program changes that way nationally, we have seen in just the last couple of weeks with the initial results from Arkansas that enrollment is going to go down by millions, if not in excess of 10 million people. If this was to become just these sorts of barriers to getting Medicaid and staying on Medicaid for adults were to become just a structural part of the Medicaid program in many or most states, so you would see that 30 million number go down substantially, and you would see it affect children and their levels of enrollment as well, right? Over time, there's massive evidence that enrollment of parents in health insurance is a very important support to enrollment of children in health insurance. I think if you put Patrick's response and my response together, there is just a huge swing in terms of the outcome of this election from really buttressing the existing levels of coverage for adults and securing them to significantly damaging them.
Follow-up, or is anybody else coming on the line?
And we have a few more questions. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Renata. I'm from Arizona PBS. Thanks for getting my question. I was wondering, in Arizona, how can Arizona really be affected if we've already had the Medicaid expansion last year, and even if the Republican governor gets reelected, I think he's going to keep that policy. And so I was just wondering how Arizona fits in that.
So I think in terms of the future in Arizona, I think, as you said, we're still waiting to see the outcome of that election. But I also think that there's still significant uncertainty in terms of both what gets approved in what Arizona has proposed and how it gets implemented. And that's affected not just by the gubernatorial election, but by the state legislative elections there, and by how implementation is happening in other states and what becomes kind of the norm in Republican-led states around Medicaid.
And this is Patrick. I just will say for the legislative races, obviously the margin in the Arizona Senate and the House is smaller than it is in some other states. They don't have a two-thirds majority, and there is a possibility changes perhaps in the Arizona Senate that would have an influence on the political environment there. Did Ricardo have a second follow-up question? Or I just want to make sure we didn't miss that, April.
And Ricardo, if you can press star one if you had a follow-up question. Caller, please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you for looping back to me, but I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Next caller, please go ahead.
Yes. This is Henry Corsium, How World Herald. I had a question for Adam, I guess. You know, besides affecting the uninsured in Nebraska, obviously this would mean hundreds of millions of dollars for the healthcare industry in the state. How active is the healthcare industry going to be in this campaign, either financially or otherwise?
Thanks for that question. So the Nebraska Hospitals Association has been very active in support and very vocal in support. And so they've been a huge advocate, particularly for our rural hospitals, which are the ones that are, in some cases, most threatened by not expanding Medicaid. In addition, we've had the Nebraska Association of Behavioral Health Organization. They've supported financially. There's several other health associations that we'll be able to, I think, announce that we'll be supporting financially as well, but they're going to their boards. So the health community is our big supporters. They actually, in some cases, helped collect signatures through their volunteers and some of their staff, and they'll continue to be critical stakeholders in getting this passed and educating folks.
Okay. Thank you. I guess I would have one follow-up.
If you have specific questions about – yeah, go for it.
This would be unrelated, really. It's, you know, we also, besides the election issues going on right now, there's the specter of the litigation that's out there, and our state is one of the ones that's part of it. Does that hang over these political efforts at all?
Well, are you talking about the litigation that's somewhat unrelated on Medicaid stuff, or are you talking about the litigation that was solved by the Supreme Court last week? I just want to make sure I'm...
I can't say I'm an expert on it. I understood there was litigation that was seeking to throw out Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, so the Nebraska, there was a court case brought by the local or state party official, J.L. Spray, and a few state senators to get it off the ballot. The Nebraska Supreme Court decided last week. You're talking about
that's
different litigation.
Yeah, I'm talking about the national scale litigation that the attorney.
You're talking about Texas. Yeah, Texas.
Right.
Yeah, I think Families USA would be able to take care of that better. Okay.
Right.
So yeah, obviously there's the case down in Texas that is trying by the attorney generals of Texas and other states to have the ACA ruled unconstitutional based on the Congress's repeal of the individual mandate. That would have an effect in terms of the overall Affordable Care Act, and which includes the Medicaid expansion pieces. So, yes, that case has been heard, and we're awaiting a decision there in that case. Whatever the outcome in the district court, it will be appealed to the appeals court and ultimately end up going to the Supreme Court. I think that, you know, from our perspective, the lawsuit itself does not have grounds because the Congress, while it was repealing the individual mandate, did not actually repeal the Affordable Care Act as a whole. And so, therefore, there is, you know, severability there. It's also in terms of what it repealed was the enforcement, not the the underlying notion that there would be a mandate. So that sort of breaks it up. So whatever the outcome, there is going to be, I think, months more of litigation before anything would happen, and again, we don't know how the court's going to rule there. I will say that a subsequent lawsuit has been filed by the Maryland Attorney General to have the Affordable Care Act ruled constitutional, and that would be moving through a separate district court, and that was just filed last week. So there on the litigation side, there are a number of competing efforts.
Great. Thank you.
And there are no further questions at this time.
Well, thank you, April. So this is Patrick Willard again from Families USA. We appreciate everyone joining us. We especially appreciate Senator Moorfield and Stacey Stanford from Utah and Nebraska joining us for today's call. I'd like to also thank Elliot Fishman, my colleague here at Families USA, for participating. As you can see, these 2018 elections are critical, not just on the congressional level, but also on the state level. And the decisions that are going to be made and the role healthcare plays in these elections is one that is going to affect how legislatures address Medicaid expansion and other Medicaid issues in 2019 and going forward. So we appreciate you joining us on the call today and learning a little bit about that. If you have further follow-up questions for us, please reach out to Annette Ravenot for any additional questions or follow-ups you may have. But thank you for joining us today.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.